Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hey, hello.
Derek, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good. I'm back.
You're back. Had some family things to deal with. Yep. All taken care. Yep. Everybody's good. Everything's fantastic.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I missed out on the...
You missed out on a great weekend.
Quiet Adventure Symposium.
A lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to tell you anything that happened, just so that you don't know.
Missed out on White Castle.
Right? Sliders with Kevin Callen. Oh.
What a fun ride down.
It's always a fun ride down with Kevin. Because, you know, we get to torment him. He doesn't know what to do.
Yeah.
He had a John Denver hat. Oh,
I saw it.
I don't know. He didn't put it in his video. He put a video, but he didn't put... Remember how the last time he videoed, we had turkeys?
Yes.
We had something a bit bigger than turkeys this time.
Buffalo?
A little bit lower.
Lower on the food chain?
Yeah. Deer.
Oh, there's... Yeah.
There was deer. We were driving along. Put on the brakes. Kevin opens and we open the window and Kevin's just filming deer. Yeah, it was cool. Turkeys last time, deer this time. It's always a good time.
It's like a petting zoo down there.
Right? Yeah. Well, we saw a deer right in people's lawn.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, what up with that? Going out for your morning stroll and there's all these deer in your way. Be awesome. No, it was a really good time. Cynthia and her crew really put on a really good show every year. This year especially. Enjoyed it getting down there. And we had our new booths with the big tent canopy and all that set up.
Yeah. I saw pictures of it.
Yeah.
So I hadn't seen it set up in person before. So
neither have I. Yeah, I decorated a little bit with a life jacket, a dry suit, a paddle.
And, nice job.
And everything like that. Our banners were up there.
Yeah. Beauty.
Did the job.
Yeah, we always struggled with the previous setup with the freestanding poles and and the crossbar. And so this year, I assume it was a lot easier to hang stuff off of.
It sure was. Just hang those up because there's little crossbeams up there. And
perfect.
I think we'll put a chandelier in there next year, maybe a sound system, a ceiling fan.
Yeah. LED lighting.
Maybe we can hang a whole canoe from the rafters, right? Yeah, but you know what, though? Like, come 4:30, because the show goes till 5.
Yeah.
4:30, there's people already starting to pack up. Like, there's still people walking around. What are
there's
you doing?
There's people here.
And we always save Jerry Vandiver for the end.
Yep.
Same as last year, same as this year. And we always record, like, we like to end the show with him in the booth. And every year, he's playing a song as people are packing up. It's like it's like Nero playing the violin while Rome burns,
or the orchestra playing while the Titanic sinks,
right?
Yeah.
So anyway, no, you know what? They put on a good show again this year. Lots of people there and whatnot, but it wasn't the same without you there. It was weird. It was really. I mean, last week it was a bit weird, but I mean, I just pulled some. Episodes that we enjoyed from previous symposiums and threw those together. But sitting in the booth, not looking at your ugly mug across from me and chatting with somebody.
Yeah.
It was just weird.
Well, Arianna went down, so that was nice that she was able to help and help you set up and do that stuff.
You know what? She helped set up and everything like that and kept me company. And she even helped Kevin Callen sell some books and stuff while he had his present. Because usually when they're selling, you know, he'll just look at whoever's next to him selling books like Cliff Jacobson or something and say, hey, can you just wash my table while I go do my presentation? And but no, she went, sat there and sold books for him while he was away and whatnot. So it really worked out well. She had a great time.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, she's everywhere. And she was overlooking at the rabbits.
Oh, did she go see the rabbits?
They had the, what are the big ones?
Something giant.
The Flemish Giants.
Flemish Giants.
They had young ones, so they weren't the really, like the ones the size of a small car.
Mm-hmm.
No, they were about the size of a motorbike. But yeah, they had a lot of those, and she just came back. They're like, we should look into what it would take to get one across the border. Stick it under your shirt and run like a bandit.
Throw it in the back seat. What's that? It's a blanket.
It's a blanket. It's my Flemish blanket.
Why did your blanket blink at me?
Oh, excuse me, border officer. Are you high? Just turn the tables. No, it was good. Everybody had a good time. I did get a lot of interviews in, which we're going to be doing. I think we're getting like 3 episodes out of
the interviews. Yes, yeah. Awesome.
So it's less work for us. Yeah. Right. It works already. Less work for you.
I know. It's great. And it also helps because we do have the film fest next week.
Right.
So it's good that we're busy this time of year, right?
Yeah.
With the shows and I assume you're not going to Cornucopia.
No.
Undecided.
No. You know what? Like I say, at the last minute, Thursday, I might just go, you know what?
I'm going.
I feel a cold coming on. I'm going to go to Wisconsin to get rid of it. But I can't see me going to Cornucopia this year. What I want to do is talk to Darren Bush.
Who's that?
What do you mean, who's that? He's the grand poobah of Cornucopia.
Is he?
Yeah, but without the big funky Fred Flintstone hat.
Oh, okay.
Well, I don't know. Maybe he does have one. Anyway, I want to talk to Darren Bush about maybe if he will give us a spot down there, 10x10 spot.
Yeah.
Maybe we go to Cornucopia next year.
Oh.
And interview people for like 3 days straight.
Oh, man, that would be exhausting.
That would be like, if we get 3 shows out of 1 day... That'd be like 9 episodes. That'd be like 2 months. Yeah. We wouldn't have to record again till the following year.
It'd be amazing.
Right? Just because, I mean, the number of people and paddlers and speakers and all that there. Like, wow. We could have a field day.
Yeah.
So maybe I'll send... Yeah, once Cornucopia is done, and I think he's going away afterwards... And then I'll send him a little note saying, hey, pal, buddy, friend of ours, what's happening next year? You got any ideas yet? So, could happen.
Maybe.
Yeah. Before we do, however, get into this week's episode, I have to all the listeners that came by and said hello.
To all the listeners that came before.
Yeah. Tons of them.
Yes.
A lot. I was surprised at how many people came by and, hey, love your show. I've been listening to it. Just found your show.
Yeah.
That sort of deal. It was really cool to, you know, and I like this and I like that episode. And
it's nice to know that it's not just our mothers or fathers that are listening to it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's nice to know that other people are actually listening. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, got a lot of people out there. And to all the people that brought beer.
Yes, we're
set up. We have so much. This is so going to make up for dry January. Oh, we have beers, I think, from, well, that's not the Midwest. That's the central, what would you call that? Like all that area.
I don't know.
That's, Michigan, Indiana, all that area, New York State,
Great Lakes
Pennsylvania,
region.
The Great Lakes region.
Yeah.
Yeah, to all the people from the Great Lakes region that brought us beer.
Yeah, we're going to have beer for recording for like a month.
Till next Cornucopia. Yeah, I think I may have pulled an arm muscle lifting.
Carrying it out
to the truck. didn't have to claim it at the border.
No?
No, they didn't ask.
Oh,
I was ready to say, I've got some beers in the back, and if they wanted to look, they could look.
How much did you spend? I didn't spend
a dime. I didn't spend a dime.
They were gifts. Yes.
So to all the people that actually, and that shows how many people listen to our show.
Yeah. Right on.
You know, so yeah, we got a lot of different types of beer to try and whatnot. So thank you very much. It's really well appreciated. And like I say, everybody just listening and showing their appreciation and their love for the show while we were down there was just mm-hmm. fantastic. Just can't say enough about it.
Excellent.
So when we, well, not just us, any show, any podcast, any new show, any, you know, like W5, anything like that.
Yeah.
When they get a story on, and they say, you know, here, explain who you are, what you're doing, what your goals are, blah, 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 blah. At the end, it's like, you know what, I really hope you succeed and hope you reach your goals and all that sort of stuff. Yes. And then you never hear from them again.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So this year, and it's funny because one of our favorite episodes we played last week, and if you haven't listened to last week's show, you will definitely want to listen to it before you listen to this section.
Mm-hmm.
One of the tables two over from our booth was the Chicago Adventure Therapy.
Yep.
And we talked to them 5 years ago. Andre Knepper was there, and she came over with a couple of the she came over with Brianna Haynes.
Yep.
And we chatted about who they were, what they did, and what their goals were, and what they were hoping to get out of all of this. And she walked by and just chit-chatting, and it just occurred to me while she was standing there talking, I said, what happened with Brianna? Did you guys reach the goals? Is she now, you know, off and running with everything she's learned? Yep. Is she, like, what? And we got a little bit of chat, and I said, you know what? Why don't we talk? Because it's been 5 years.
Yeah, we'll do an update.
I didn't even think it was 5 years, but it was 5 years since we did that recording.
Mm-hmm.
What's happened? So much has happened. Like, I mean, we get into the interview, and I'm just like, oh, yeah, like, because the whole COVID thing happened.
Oh, yes.
And there was things that happened during that. And then, yeah, I'm not going to spoil the interview, but all of a sudden you're sitting there going like, wow, like 5 years and the things that have happened in those 5 years and now what their plans are to keep it going. And I will spoil a part saying like they're surprised it's still going after COVID.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, they talk about the plans. She brought a couple of girls over with her to chit chat, and we had a nice little like 46-minute conversation about what had happened since we talked 5 years ago, what the goals are, what they're getting out of it, and how it's becoming huge, and all these different aspects that are in it, and everything. So.
Well, I never listen to the podcast because I'm here recording it.
Right.
I'm actually going to have to listen to the podcast.
You're going to have to listen to the next three podcasts. So here is the interview I did at Kauai Adventure Symposium with the Chicago Adventure Therapy. It is a really good one, and really happy that we actually had the chance to do this one. So the next group of guests we have here, Derek's going to absolutely kill me because 2019, there was a group down from us at one of the tables, and Derek says, Chicago Adventure Therapy, we got to talk to these people because they get people out there, youth out there, that paddling and getting in the outdoors. We got to chat with them, find out what's going on. And I don't know why it really struck a chord with Derek at the time. So, Andrea, we had you here,
yes,
and you filled us in. So, yes. Andrea, you're here again, Andre Knepper.
Yes, hello.
And with us is?
My name is Tia Coates.
And
Zabari Widor.
Welcome. So, as I was saying earlier, is when you talk about something, a lot of times we'll do a story on something, and then it's oh, you know what, like, this is awesome, this is fantastic, I hope everything works out how you want it to work out. And then that's the end of the story. There never seems to be that update. Well, now you guys are here. It's what, five years later. My math sucks. It's 5 years later. Everything we talked about 5 years ago, all these plans that you guys had, and all the things that you're, you know, the programs you're implementing, and the thoughts that you had on where you hope it all goes, is it doing it?
So, I mean, COVID changed the trajectory, right?
Right.
For us at CAT, Chicago Adventure Therapy, we call it CAT. It changed the trajectory for us at CAT. It changed the trajectory for the globe, right? So, are we doing exactly what we thought we would in 2019? No. Are we doing basically the same thing? Yes. In different ways. And, I mean, you know, when COVID first hit, we had to shut down programming for most of a summer, and
right.
And you know, that spring it was just about staying connected to the people who we were already connected with and making sure they were okay, and we really had to stop and say, okay, we're an outdoor adventure organization, but even more important than that is the people who we're in community with, and right now some of them are in really big trouble. And so it became, making sure we were staying in touch with them and making sure, you know, people were asking us, do you know where I can get food? Do you know where I can get mental health care? Do you know, what about jobs? Like, basic, people were struggling. And yeah. How do we stay connected? And can we get people connected to resources? Like, we had somebody who had been a former participant who was in the hospital with flu-like symptoms, didn't know if it was COVID. This was at the very, very, very beginning. There weren't, like, you know, tests were taking forever to come back, and it wasn't COVID. Or no, he didn't know if it was COVID yet, but they were releasing him from the hospital. He was living with his grandmother, who wouldn't let him come back home because didn't know if it was COVID or not. He didn't have anywhere else to go, but the home, like, the shelter services in Chicago weren't taking anybody in, partly because they were full because they had less capacity, right? And the hospital released him with nowhere to go, and he rode the trains, the public transportation, that night.
Right.
And this is how COVID affected some of our participants and former participants and the people in our community. So it really was this massive shift to how do we just stay connected and make sure people are okay. And then we started figuring out how we could continue to do things in community, and then we figured out, hey, you know what, we can paddle safely in a socially distanced way, but how do we get people there? Transportation was the issue, and a lot of our partner agencies canceled all programming, and so we couldn't do programming with them. But we realized families could travel together, and we could paddle safely, socially distanced, outdoors with families.
Right.
And so we instituted family adventures, and we offered that. We contacted all of our partner agencies, and we offered family adventures, and now family adventures are something that we do regularly 5 years later. And Tia and Zabari both work a lot more programming than I do and can tell you so much more about those. And then we also started doing community festivals, which Zabari is in charge of and can really tell you a lot more. And we're just much more grassroots in the community.
Okay.
And so the number of people we worked with plummeted in 2020 from around 300 in a year to 160. But then the year after that, we worked with more than 750 people.
Wow.
In 2021, and then in 2022, we worked with 1,226.
Wow.
Yeah, and so we just saw this massive growth, which that in itself, it's amazing and it's so exciting. And we went from a full-time staff of 2 to 8 full-time year-round. But that's also really challenging because the systems that we had and the infrastructure we had for working with 300 people in a year with 2 staff... It was strained under 300 people, and now we were working with 1,200, and our systems just couldn't take it. Yeah, and so in 2023, we made the really, really difficult and painful decision to say we are not going to grow any programming. We're going to build the systems that are going to support what we want to do in the future, and we've been building those systems, and some people have some new titles, like Zabari is now our Associate Executive Director. And Tia is now our development coordinator, and people are taking on new responsibilities and learning new things, and it's been really hard, and we're getting some of that stuff built so that then now in 2024 we can say, okay, you know, 2023 we worked with almost exactly the same number that we worked with in 2022, but now in 2024 we're able to say, hey, now we can grow programming again, and we can do it in a planful way. We're still building the systems, but we've got them a little bit more, and we can be ourselves and who we are at CAT in a deeper way, a more sustainable way.
Okay.
And so like, what are we doing compared to 2019? Like, everything looked like it was going to collapse, right? Yeah. And then we had to build back from that really, really painfully, and we're on the brink of doing some really, really exciting things. And really excited that Zabari is the associate executive director. She is the next executive director of Chicago Adventure Therapy, because in these 5 years, her vision for what CAT can be has outpaced mine. And
oh,
it's not
so
just Zabari. What's that?
You're the old guard.
I am, and that's so exciting. Like, and Tia's right there with Zabari. All my staff are, and they have a bigger vision than I do, and that's really, really cool.
Well, when we talked back in 2019, you hoped it would grow and grow, and I know you had eventually thought about you would step away,
yep,
and just let it grow, and.
Yeah.
So it is.
Yeah, and we're doing succession planning. We're doing succession planning. Like, I do plan to step away.
And she's being very intentional about that. like, no, seriously, she is. A lot of the times, okay, so for example, on Sunday we had a pool session where we brought out a youth that, you know, it's cold in Chicago, so we brought them out to the pool session. Andrea calls me that morning. She's like, would it be awkward if I show up as a private citizen and not with the organization? I'm like, no. So the whole time I was like, hey, private citizen, are you okay?
Yep. It was the first time in years that I've gotten to go to the pool and just, like, paddle my boat.
Right. So you are still having all the paddling sessions and the getting people out.
Yes.
You're planning for this summer to get more people out there paddling. And are you still doing the camping and everything as well?
Yeah.
Camping, we are. Climbing, hiking, biking, all of it.
Wow.
We, in 2022, January, February, we had our very first ice climbing trip.
That's awesome. Where did you guys do that?
We did that at Teta Gooch National Park.
Okay. I mean, up my way in Toronto, like, right, you would swear it's spring all year round.
Yeah. We had about 4 days of winter this year.
Yeah. We got a big snowstorm, and the next day it's all gone.
Yeah.
I mean, I was out paddling on Thursday.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is just so wrong.
My neighbor's daffodils are blooming.
Oh. that sucks. So, you know, I mean, with all the COVID thing and that sort of smushing everything down,
mm-hmm.
being able to build it back up, you got to think you had that pretty good base already, right?
Yeah.
And now you guys are starting to build this back up and up and up. So you're looking at forward 5 years sort of thing. How big do you think this is going to be?
Zabari has a vision.
Uh-oh.
You want to answer?
Oh, go ahead.
And so me and Zabari plan to make CAT a multi-million dollar business. So in the next 5 years, we will be striving very hard to make it as such.
Across the nation.
Across the nation.
So you want to go out of Chicago?
Yes.
Into different cities?
We want that
Absolutely.
Structure and the way that we do what we do with paddling, with the outdoors in general. Not just paddling, but just the outdoors in general, and how we are super inclusive and intentional about bringing people in, retaining them, and just... That model of the outdoors is about, like, personal growth and restoration and all of that, to be able to input that in so many different places across the nation. So that is the big goal. I don't know if we'll accomplish that in 5 years, but with the different connecting with all these other organizations and creating that network of outdoor enthusiasts who are diverse and across the nation, like, I think that's going to help us to meet that goal.
Well, if you can keep the interest and you keep the people there,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you got to give them something that they want to keep coming back.
Absolutely.
And then it just grows from there and keeps growing and growing.
Exactly. And yeah, and there's people realize that the outdoors is healing. And I think COVID really pushed that. Like, people realize, like, wow, like, being stuck inside and having to be with my family all the time, or just, like, on a computer screen, that's not the way that we want to move forward. And people really started recreating, really going into the outdoors. And so that need and that want for the therapeutic aspect and that just, like, that healingness of the outdoors, it's there. The want is there. And so, like, we need to continue to spread it. We need to continue to, like, push that.
You know, like, up where I live there, like, people are just chomping at the bit to get back out everywhere. Even if it was just to walk the dog. And, you know, they're saying you can do this and you go here and you can't go there. And one of the big things was
I'm going to take my canoe down to the river. Mm-hmm. Well, you can't go through this park.
Mm.
Yeah, but... So we did anyway, of course, but getting out there was such... I had to work from home for... My wife is a nurse, so she was dealing directly with COVID patients.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So, you know, if anybody was going to bring COVID into the company, it was going to be me. Mm-hmm. So we made the decision that I'm working from home and sitting in my basement for a year with my daughter's new two kittens. It was challenging. I don't mind doing solo canoe trips and that for like a couple of weeks or whatever, being on my own. But being in the house on a computer for that amount of time without that connection and without being able to get out on the water or go for a big hike or something like that, that was brutal. Absolutely brutal. So when everybody was allowed to get back out there, like Algonquin Park,
yeah.
Oh, it is just hammered now. Mm-hmm. And a lot of new people that haven't canoe tripped and stuff before take the basic little, oh, here's what I need, and off they go.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they're trying to learn. I mean, kudos to them to get out there. But there's got to be some sort of teaching method. And if you guys can take all these people that are just chomping at the bit to get outdoors, be it ice climbing or paddling or hiking or, you know, backpacking, and you can get them that interest and get them that training and get them out there, and they're having fun, and they pass on that information, and they start joining this group and branching out. It's just like a giant spider web, isn't it?
It is. It's totally, yeah, that's totally what it is. And so, you know, COVID in that interest, and we could do the family adventures, but then also that interest in being outdoors, but also then a lot of the folks we work with don't trust the outdoors. And Zabari said it really, really nicely earlier today in their presentation, and maybe you should just say it, but like, I mean, a lot of the people who we work with, and especially black and brown people, the outdoors has been a place that's dangerous. It's mm-hmm. been a place that kind of didn't belong to them in a lot of ways. And so the idea of recreating outdoors is... can be scary, or they're a little bit suspicious of it, or they have questions. And so our community festivals, and Zabari was one of the people who came to me and said, hey, we have this idea, we should do this. And we literally, like, we go to parks when we do our own, we go to block parties, we go back to school festivals, right? And we show up with boats and paint and let people paint the boats and, like, interact with the gear. Or we show up with ropes that aren't climbing ropes, and gree-grees and harnesses and teach people how to do a figure of eight knot and how to belay, and we show up with life jackets and paddles and let people sit in boats and ask the questions they have. We show up with compasses and charts and let them just kind of interact with the compass. And when they start interacting with it, we start, you know, answering their questions about it or looking at the chart with people. And then people can start asking some of the other questions, like, what do I do if my hair gets wet? And what do I do? I feel like I'm not the one to be talking about this, but just, like, you know, really communities that have not necessarily felt like the outdoors are for them. And when we show up and we've got black and brown staff who are saying, no, this is for us, and let me answer your questions.
And you can get that little interest started.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
All it takes just planting that seed.
Yeah.
So those community festivals, and then we've also been in a similar vein. There's a, and really either of you should jump in at any point. the Steelworkers Climbing Wall is one of the only outside climbing walls in Chicago. It's on the south side. It's one of the few climbing walls on the south side, and it was a steel.
Yeah, so Steelworkers was a steel mill where they will bring in the big boats and dump out the iron to be able to create steel.
Mm-hmm. And there was dry dock there.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's still like little small pieces of the steel, yeah, that are still in the ground, and so they turned it into a climbing wall. And
that's
so
cool.
Now, us and I think the Forest Preserve are the only two people that can operate that wall.
The Park District.
Yeah.
The Park District owns it. And for a while, the Park District couldn't operate the wall because they didn't have anyone on staff who could do it.
Mm-hmm.
And we were for a little while, the only organization who could operate that wall. And then now the Park District, Chuck can run it. So,
and we have community climbs, mm-hmm. and now like they're mm-hmm. setting up new routes to make it more available and accessible to the community and folks around. And so we're hoping to set up new routes, name them, you know, and then be able to like do even more community climbs and make that available for folks and bring other organizations and other people into it.
That's cool. Because, I mean, it's a Toronto Adventure Show. They put up an indoor climbing wall with floors. Mm-hmm. I mean, not massive, but there's always people on it.
Yeah.
Especially kids.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
all want to...
Kids are so good at climbing.
Yeah.
And if you have, like, enough routes that are all next to each other, you get, like, four kids or, like, three kids, like,
right?
side by side. Yeah.
They
yeah.
love to, like, race on the wall. And
I started my son rock climbing. I think he was about five or six.
Mm-hmm.
And just sitting there watching him going, like, wow. But you know, I mean, I started climbing back in the late 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the thing, is like all the VHS tapes at the time. That's how old I am.
Yeah.
You're really aging yourself.
Right?
I'm there with you.
They used to have all these tapes that you could watch of all these guys climbing through the states and everything like that. And one of the things was, kids are born with that ability.
Yeah.
And if you don't use it, you lose it.
Mm-hmm.
That's why when you try to take it up as an adult, you're, you know. Mm-hmm. But the kids, you're just like, really? So if you can get, again, if you can get them that interest at a younger age,
mm-hmm.
then maybe they keep that interest going,
mm-hmm.
and eventually dive right in.
Yeah.
So how much do you guys see that? Like, do you guys see anybody going like, that's really cool, and I've got to do it?
So yes. I've seen it, and I'm also living proof of it. So
awesome.
I started off as a participant in 2014. And it took me a while to really like kayaking. I'm going to be 100% honest here. But once I really got to like it, it was just like they couldn't get rid of me.
Right. Well, that's always a good thing.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. We created a climbing community because of that interest. Like, young people are like, oh, I really enjoy this and I want to continue to be connected to it regardless if I'm with my organization or not. And I want more opportunities to climb here, anywhere, actually. And we have a 12-year-old who his mom and him climbed for the first time at Steelworkers Wall in September of last year. And now they have done, like, several climbing trips with us. They just did an ice climbing trip on their own or just, like, getting into it. And he loves climbing. Like, and he's starting at 12 and he's really going for it. And we're hoping that as the years continue, we continue to offer those trips and that availability of the wall and just watch him blossom in the climbing world.
That's cool. Because, I mean, when I was getting to climbing, it was becoming a major... I mean, I don't know how much you were into, but, you know, they're all of a sudden they're free climbing Half Dome.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, okay, I love climbing, but I'm not that dumb.
Nope.
We don't do that.
Better risk assessment than that.
Right?
Some of these big name people, they're going, you know, over to France and down south, you know, to Texas and California and all that. And like I say, I mean, once you get into it, if you keep that interest,
yeah.
who knows?
Well, right. We're kind of looking at what are all these different entrance points, and we have five different program areas now, which we did not when we last talked with you, right? So we have our core programming where we work with the other youth-serving organizations,
right.
and we provide programming for them, and that's what we've been doing since 2008. And then we have these adventure communities, like Zabari was just talking about, the climbing community, and we have a paddling community, and we have a racing and fitness community, and that really is people who have done programming with us through other youth-serving organizations, and that might be weekly programming for 6 weeks in the summer, right? But then that ends. And so for a lot of young people, it's the first time that they've been introduced to the sport or to the venue, and access opens up, And then when that program closes, then access closes down again.
Right.
And so we looked at how do we keep that access open, and that's these adventure communities. But then in COVID, then we developed the family adventures and those community festivals, so that it's really kind of getting out much more grassroots. And like we, you know, COVID, during that summer, we would go out with a family adventure, and we'd be paddling, you know, at Jackson Park on the south side, and someone would see us from the shore and ask about it. And it was the first time that when they said, oh, who are you? Oh, can we do that? That we could say yes. Because we had been doing core programming. It was with partner agencies, right?
Right.
So it was like, oh, you had to be part of this youth-serving organization in order to do this with us. And instead, then now we could say, yeah, you can do this. And they would say, well, how much does it cost? And this is literally like in a conversation. We're in our boats, like, talking to people on shore, right? And so we're, like, yelling this conversation. Yeah. And they're like, well, but how much does it cost? And we said, free. And they said, what?
Hook, line, and sinker.
But then so we could say, hey, pull out your phone, email this address, and we'll schedule it with you,
yeah.
Right? And so then now we're creating access. It's a completely different way of creating access for communities where there's usually not access, right? And we're paddling in places that are mostly black and brown neighborhoods, as opposed to most of the paddling community in Chicago is white,
right?
And so there's that, and then there's these community festivals, and again, like a completely different entry point, right? And then in 2021, was that when we started after school?
Yes,
yeah. Fall 2021. We had a youth-serving agency who does stuff in the schools come to us and say, hey, we're really interested in having you do after-school programming. And so we're doing that, which is really... It's the hardest programming we do.
Yeah.
Hands down, hardest programming we do. And some of the most creative programming we do. Because when we're doing after school actually in the schools, as opposed to in other agencies that are doing programming in after school hours, we have to be in the school.
Right.
Like, we can be outside on school grounds when it's warm enough, but we can't go paddling, we can't go climbing, and so, like, I don't know if you two want to say something,
yeah,
about, like,
yeah.
Oh, maybe in a hallway or a classroom.
Yeah.
So, Chicago Public Schools has this no water rule, and so it's, yeah.
What's the no water rule?
So, we can't take the youth off of campus, nor can we take them on field trips to go paddling or in a pool or anything. And that's really hard to be an outdoor adventure company, and we can't take our youth outside.
Right.
And so, we have to think of very creative ways to be able to introduce them into outdoor adventure sports. So, one time, we built a climbing wall with sleeping bags on the ground and hand and footprints. And we had them do an obstacle course with sleeping bags on the ground.
And they had the love harnesses on. We had somebody at the top who held the anchor to kind of keep him. We had a belay person. And they realized it took all three of them. If your anchor dropped, like, you can't climb up. And it takes all three of you to make that happen.
That's cool.
Yeah, we've also strapped kayaks to rolling boards. And so they're able to, like, you know, use the, we'll put, like, bamboo sticks and, like, little tennis balls in, and they get the motion of paddling. And we did a little obstacle course where they had to pump up their supboard, they're on their life jackets, put on their helmet, because we're doing serious kayaking in the hallway. You need your helmet for that.
Serious
kayaking. Yeah, like, you never know when you're going to do rock gardening out there.
Things happen.
Yeah. We did put on their helmets, pop in their kayak with their partner, and paddle over, and then make that switch. Like, it was a thing that they needed to be able to do all those different pieces, and they're not outside doing it, they're not in the water, but they're getting the motion, they're getting that feel for it, and they're realizing all the different pieces and equipment that has to go with it.
Well, and eventually, if they do get on the water, they've got the basics ready to go.
Exactly.
Like, I mean, I've never been on a paddleboard before. In one of the interviews we did with this guy that's a local stand-up paddleboard trainer, like, he's a company, that's what he does, right? And he said, okay, we'll go out. Now get up. Let's go. Is it that easy?
Oh, no.
I'm used to kneeling in a canoe or sitting in a kayak, standing. Yeah. Mind you, now I do canoe pulling. Where you stand up in your canoe with a pole, and you go up and down rapids. Teach that one.
I don't like teaching that one. I don't like polling.
That'll get pulled from the school.
Yeah. Well, but it's really interesting because then we have these five program areas, right? And initially it was like, okay, the entry point is core programming, maybe after school, and then people go into adventure communities from that, right? But now there's this sort of fuzzy line between adventure communities and community festivals because, you know, the Steelworkers Climbing Wall or community paddling days on the African American Heritage Water Trail on the far south side, right? Are those community festivals or are those family adventures or are those our adventure community? Like, it's not, there's not clear lines, and there's not clear lines exactly where the entry point is. So it's not like you have to enter here and then you go there. Like, sometimes people enter through a community festival and then they join the adventure communities, or like Zabari was talking about, that family that entered through Steelworkers Park and then they came into adventure communities. Sometimes people enter directly through adventure communities, but they're all entryways to access to these sports and to these venues in ways that people haven't had before, and they're all ways of breaking down the barriers to that access, and they're all ways of being in nature and or doing something that gets you out of your comfort zone, and both of those then facilitating them in ways that they're healing. And so all of them are new access points. They're all ways of breaking down that barrier. They're all ways of being at that intersection between, like, outdoor adventure and justice and healing. And right. I don't think there's very many places that operate in that intersection.
I'll be honest here. Growing up, I mean, I lived in, like, northern Canada a lot, northern parts. Until I moved to Toronto, I wasn't... There wasn't a large black or brown community. It was in whites and a lot of native groups, right? Mm-hmm. That's where we lived.
Yeah.
And when I moved to Toronto, it really baffled me that there was the whole... It was the only white people going out doing all of this. I from my experience growing up, I didn't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's times now where I'm still like... Everything's here, but I get it from not being on that side of the table. It doesn't make sense to me, sort of thing, right? Like, everything's here, but you guys have your own roadblocks that you have to get, you know, past. I mean, they've been there for
there's systematic and historical,
systems in place to stop us from creating that equity to be able to afford these water sports.
Yeah, like, or to feel comfortable recreating in it instead of having it be something for survival.
Yeah. Exactly. So when you say, somebody says how much and you say free, like right off the bat I'm thinking, there's number one, it's free.
It's free.
It's free.
But there's still hesitation there.
You're waiting, like you say, what's the catch sort of deal. And it's funny because when I go for a walk, and just the whole cultural thing is, I have a dog. When I go for a walk, if I'm walking towards certain groups, they all cross the street, walk, and then cross back. Because where they live, where they have come to Canada from, a dog isn't a pet, right? So there's all these things that we have to get over that, to me, like, until I moved to Toronto, weren't part of my world.
Well, and historically in the States, like, outdoor spaces have been recreation for white people. Mm-hmm. They've not been recreation for black and brown people. They've been places that are dangerous.
Yeah.
Right? Or if you look at water, the safe places to swim were white only in segregation.
Right.
Right. And so the places that black people could swim were the places that had unsafe currents or were toxic. There were toxic chemicals there. Like, it was places, like, that literally that were not safe. And so then, you know, so many black people don't know how to swim. And that's, like, how do you then say, oh, I'm going to go kayaking, and I don't know how to swim, and is that even safe, and is water even safe? And there are historical reasons for, like, water and outdoors just not being safe spaces. And you know, in the growth of Cat, at the beginning, it was me. It's this old white lady saying, hey, come kayak. It's really fun, right?
That, like, free puppies on the side of a van.
Right? But now we have black and brown people on staff who can say, hey, come kayak. Actually, it's going to be okay.
And attest to it, because they themselves, exactly. Like, it's not like, oh, we're promoting and from not having personal experience. Like, we have done this for years. We love it. We see all the safety precautions that are put in place. We can talk to you in depth about all the different things you question and all the doubts that you have, and answer those questions and walk with you through that progression to get bypass that, to get some courage to be able to say, hey, I'm going to take that step and own the outdoors, own the water system, own this forest, own all of these things in this adventure sport.
Oh, that's so important to get the firsthand experience. Like you say, I mean, not just from some white lady that's trying to pawn something off. Like,
And to be able to create a comfortable space for black and brown people, for them to show up and get off of the bus and see me and Zabari liaisoning this, they're like, we do this as black people? And I'm like, we do this as black
people. We're leading.
Like,
we don't just do it. We're leading. We're at the top of this.
Yeah. We're at the top of the food chain of this, and we want to bring you on so you can be able to have this as well.
And then pass that on as well.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
Right? But then also, exactly, like, morph it. Like, there's a lot of language when it comes to the outdoors and paddling and things like that. Like, the jargon and all of that, and just, like, the culture of it. And then just being able to bring your own culture into that space as well. Like, you don't have to do everything the way folks who have been recreating the space do it. Like, you can play your music. You can have fun. You can make it something that is a part of the culture. And, like,
oh, definitely.
You know, yeah.
Make it your own.
In box braids with pink hair.
Yeah, like, why not?
It's going to be perfectly fine.
Well, I can't.
A little pink on the beard.
Yeah, you know what? And I mean, when I go onto social media now, because, like I said, with the podcast, I get a whole bunch of people, and I do notice, like, there's a fella in New York State big into the kayaking, and I'm like, that's the first colored fella that I've ever seen.
You're, like, probably talking about Chev. Yep.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
He's the first one I've ever seen, like, social media, putting it out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, there's one.
There's so many more. It's become, that push is there, like, the wants, the representation, it's definitely happened. It's not just, like, you know, sprinkled in there. There are folks who are going into HBCUs and creating outdoor adventure clubs that are promoting for people to, like, come into their university. That's a historically black university. Everyone left and right that you go and see is a black person, and they're going and out kayaking together. They're creating groups.
Awesome.
There's, like, it's everywhere now, and it needs to continue to grow. Not enough.
Right? I mean, the way I look at it is, like, when I get out in the water, there's more people. It's more fun. And plus, you get more, there's a bunch of people I know in Chicago that are paddling. When I go to Chicago, I got people to paddle with.
Exactly. Right?
Yeah. Exactly.
It all comes down to, it's the whole community. I mean, we talk about it up north, it's that paddling community. If there's an issue, or if you need something, or whatever, the paddling community's there.
Exactly.
You know.
And that's why I'm so inspired by Zabari's and Tia's and my staff's vision of this being national. And you know, for me, like, I created this 15 years ago from my dining room, and to think of it being national, like, there's this piece in my brain that's like, oh, that's dreaming too big. You know, like, what I've created, it was a huge dream, but they start talking about that, and I was like, my first kind of, like, knee-jerk reaction is, oh, that's too big. That's too big. We can't do that. But what's so inspiring to me about it for them is that, for them, it's not rooted in my dining room. It's just, well, this is just exists, and so then they can go so much farther.
Yeah.
And to be national like that, to be saying, yeah, we can help you create this, or, oh, do you want to do that? You know, then there are truly those communities across the country, because one of the other pieces about access and about doing it long term is that we, when we have young people who and young adults who do this and then they move somewhere else in the country, they don't know someone else there who does it already. Whereas if we can help connecting communities, because like there's so many cool organizations out there that we're working with, right? And if we can help seed more, then when, and if we can then run programming with these other organizations, right? Then we're building connections among our young people. And so when they do move to New Orleans, to Texas, right? We have people who've moved to both of those two places. When we have people who move, then there's someone there who they already know, who they can paddle with.
And that's huge.
That's huge, that's because huge. We have people who've moved to places and they stop paddling because they don't know anybody. Right, yeah. And I want people to be able to keep paddling without it having to be facilitated by CAT.
Right.
Because if they can only do it when it's through us, then we've broken down a lot of barriers, but we're also a bottleneck.
Yeah. And you want them to walk on their own. I'll teach you to walk, mm-hmm. but walk on your own sort of thing too, right?
Exactly.
But when you want to come and walk with the rest of us.
Yes. We don't want to gatekeep.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm on different social media and local ones as well. They'll say, I've just moved here. Where can I go? Mm-hmm. And it's amazing the number of people that will say, hey, we're going up to here. Or if you're looking for a group, you know, there's a women's only group, or there's a, you know, whatever guys group that does this, or, you know, there's a youth group that does this, or whatever. We go out and we paddle for an hour, then we go and play darts. All these different things. And if you want to paddle by yourself, go check out this river, go check out this river, go check out this river. Mm-hmm. And that sort of stuff. It really is there. So if you guys can branch this out nationwide, more power to you, I say. You know what? It's a good goal to have. Reach big and strive for it.
And
right?
It's also, I mean, I was going to say this country, and it's true of Canada too. The land is beautiful. There are so many beautiful, beautiful, beautiful places. And I personally, I think beauty changes you. But to me, that's also part of the conversation and the truth that nature is healing. And so as we're creating access, we're also creating access to this type of healing that is so different than talk therapy or medication or and more the research is saying it's true. It's 100% true that nature is healing.
I don't know what it's like down, but in Canada, doctors are now allowed to prescribe.
Yeah.
They can write you a prescription to go outside.
We're behind you all.
Yeah,
right?
We need to get on.
So
that.
You know what they
need?
Need
to move to Canada. Exactly.
Can you write me a vacation memo for 4 weeks?
Right.
I need to go paddle the East Coast or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I think that's true in the UK. Also, that doctors can write prescriptions, and I don't think that it's true in the States yet. But there's conversation about it.
Good.
Right.
But I mean, Kevin Callan, who's signing books behind you there. He was talking about, because he's been invited over to paddle over in Wales and England and stuff like that. And he's talking, this guy's giving a presentation, and he goes, and I didn't see anybody for 20 minutes. I just did a 9-day trip, I didn't see anybody for 8 days.
Yeah.
Awesome!
Yeah.
You know, you get away from the people. And that's the other thing is, you can get into paddling and stuff in the outdoors to get away from those things that are, like, I use an excuse to get away from the city, because there's so much in the city that's just negative and depressing and whatnot. And even my wife says, you need to go on a canoe trip. Just my whole demeanor and my mood and stuff like that. And she says, you know what? Oh, yeah, it's October. You haven't been on a canoe trip in a month.
Yeah. Go. Really early on in CAT, like, I think this happened in 2014, 13, 15, something like that. It was a paddling program. It was on the south side of Chicago. We were paddling and we were coming back, and I was talking to one of the participants, and I don't know, just asked him how it was or something, and he said, I lost my something, and I didn't hear what he lost. And I was like, oh my God, don't let it be his glasses. Like, or his keys, or like what he lost. And I was like, wait, what did you lose? And he said, I lost my anger. And it was a 2-hour program. And, you know, and I just said, yeah, you know what? That happens for me, too, when I paddle.
Yeah. There was a guy, like I said, I was paddling on Thursday. There was a guy down this river, because I'm doing the paddle at least once a month for a year.
Nice.
Right? I just got March and April left.
Nice.
So Thursday, I'm out paddling. We're going up this river, and we come around, and the sun's going down. We're really pushing it because it's after work, right? We're pushing it. And there's a guy sitting on a log. He's got a beer, and he's sitting on a log, and he's just watching the sunset totally by himself. And the look of peace on this guy's face is like almost, you know, sorry to disturb you. We didn't expect to see anybody, and he's looking at us paddle by going, yeah, neither did I.
Yeah.
But just the look on his face when he came around the corner, and he's just sitting there with his, you know, beer on his hand, sitting on a log, just watching the sunset. Mm-hmm. It's just absolute peace, you know. And getting outdoors, that's what it's about. So you guys are, so from my eyes, I have to say, you guys, you're, after 5 years, success.
Yeah.
And still going.
Yep. Yes. Definitely. Yep.
So we'll talk again in 5 years.
Perfect.
As multi-million-dollar corporation.
And a private citizen.
Yes.
And we'll see how it's all going. And I really hope, I'm hoping you guys' dreams and goals are coming true, that you can branch this across the country and get everybody involved. And it needs to happen. It really does. We need to get more people out there and, like you say, not afraid of the outdoors, because there's so much to do, you know. And I mean, we're even seeing it now when we go up winter camping.
Yeah.
Right? In the middle of a snowstorm, you're seeing people walking around. It's like, you would not have seen that 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. So getting people out there, getting the information, sharing the resources.
And teaching the safety.
Definitely teaching, yeah.
Yes.
Well, I point to my dry suit there, because if people see me without a dry suit on, and I'm saying, you gotta watch the temperature of the water and all that, oh, well, there's a picture of you without a dry suit and without a life jacket.
When we do the community festivals and take boats and people can sit in the boats, we make them, on land, on grass, far from water, we make them put a life jacket on to sit in the boat on land.
Get them used to
develop
it.
Develop those habits and that understanding and, you know, that just assumption that if you're in a boat, you wear a life jacket.
Well, and that's a total different can of worms that really shouldn't open, but making life jackets mandatory.
Right.
Yeah,
right?
We do.
So whatever the laws are, they're mandatory in our programs. Yeah. Always on policy. Always.
Yeah, yes. It has to be. It really has. I mean, to me, it's like a seatbelt.
Right.
I put my life jacket on every time I get in a boat.
Yep.
I've been doing it since I was yay high, sort of thing.
Yep.
And if I'm in a boat without a life jacket, something's missing.
I feel naked.
It's just absolutely weird, right? Yeah. That I don't have that jacket. And then you put it, that's what it was, right? You know, and you got the certain things, you know, your knife there, there's your whistle, there's your flat, all that sort of stuff, right? And then off you go. So it's... Well, congratulations to all of you.
Thank you.
For getting this going. And like I say, I'm hoping in 5 years, we're sitting here again, and maybe not you guys are sitting here because, you know, you're way up there in some big ivory tower looking down on the rest of us.
No, we'll still
be at the satellite site in California somewhere.
Not the cold areas. Yeah. Well, thank you guys for coming on the show.
Oh, my goodness.
Thank you for having us. Yeah.
We'll be talking to you again soon.
Thank you.
And that was Chicago Adventure Therapy. It was really nice to catch up with them after 5 years.
So that's neat to be able to kind of wrap that up in with a bow, to come back and see how things have progressed. Because it's been a lot of big changes over the last 5 years, right?
Yeah.
With the COVID issues and with them, them slowing down and it's hugely expanding.
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. We'll retouch base with them again
in 5 more years.
In 5 more years and see how far they've taken this. Every 5 years, we'll do an interview with them. So after I talked to them, there was a group I was walking around, and they sort of flagged me down talking about, dragon boaters. And, you know, sort of saying, are you interested in stuff?
Yeah.
And I said, well, I'm actually, you know, here with a podcast and all that sort of stuff. And I said, you know, how would you guys like to chit-chat about you?
Yeah.
So they voluntold one of the girls there. hey, go with this guy, and you're gonna talk to him about what we are, who we are, that sort of stuff. The Dragon Flyers of Michigan, Dragon Boat Team. They're not really new, but they're out there and they train, and they're trying to get more people, and they're trying to start a youth section as well.
Okay.
And they do three competition races that a year, sort of thing.
Yeah.
So so Julie, I was talking to Julie from the Dragon Flyers, and she walked me through what they do, who they are, things about dragon boating that I didn't know. But I will say, she talks about the drummer, because I said, you got a drummer?
Oh, yeah.
I don't think I ever realized. And now that I go and look at all the videos that I've seen before with the dragon boat that has a drummer,
yeah,
they sit backwards.
Yeah, yes.
So they've got to be friendly with everybody. Because if you're like dragon boating, like we've seen the snake boating and stuff on rivers, yeah, and they're going under bridges.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're not friends with everybody on that boat,
they're not gonna warn you.
They're not warning you when that bridge is coming. But if there's a quick shift or something like that, you've got to have balance.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Right? Yeah, that's not my job in the boat. Anyway, so it was a decent interview there, and I learned actually a lot about dragon boats from Julie, and it was pretty cool. So here is my interview with Julie from the Dragon Flyers of Michigan.
Next on our show, we are with Julie from Dragon Flyers of Michigan. How are you doing, Julie?
I'm doing great today.
So you guys are dragon boaters.
That's right. Yeah.
Now, we've a lot of our content is kayakers, stand-up paddleboarders, heavily into the canoe tripping because that's where, you know, what we do. We've looked at dragon boating and snake boat boating and all that sort of stuff. But dragon boating, why do you do it?
Well, I do it because it is a wonderful sport. It's the most team-oriented thing I've ever done.
Right.
And the reason for that is you've got 20 paddlers in a boat, all trying to paddle at the same time in a coordinated way. And it's a racing sport, so the idea is to race to the other end and beat the other boats.
Right.
And so, you know, I do it because it combines fitness with the outdoors, with the camaraderie of being with a great group of people.
Well, you know, the thing about canoeing is it says, if you want to know if someone is right to marry, take them on a canoe trip, because if the two of you can canoe together, now you're talking 20 people all together in a boat, all at the same. Now, do you guys do it with the drum and everything at the back?
So there is a drummer at the front.
They sit
on a small stool. Typically, the drummer's there in race events.
Okay.
But we have a drummer. Our team has a drummer, and she practices with us regularly.
Right.
Some of the racing events will require a drummer in the boat, and some don't. But traditionally, there would be a drummer in the front.
Okay. Now, you guys do just out for recreational fun, and then you also do races.
We do. So we are an ongoing group that practices here in the Lansing area from early May until middle of October.
Okay.
The team got its start when there was a dragon boat event in Lansing hosted by the Greater Lansing, the Women's Center of Greater Lansing. It was just a fundraiser, community for fun event, and you could organize a team and come that day and try the sport. And so a team grew out of that. And now we practice twice a week throughout the summer, and we usually attend three race events. This year we're going to be doing two in Michigan and one in Ohio.
Trying to get that boat from place to place.
Yeah, well, the good news is you don't have to take the boat. The race organizations provide the boats, and all the teams share them.
Okay.
We just take our boat and put it in the water at the beginning of the season and pull it at the end and then store it in an indoor storage area, so we don't have to take the boat. It's quite a process getting it in and out of the water.
I would imagine. So you guys have the same core group every year, or do you meet sort of filter in and out, or?
Some of both. There are some of us that have been involved kind of since it started here in Lansing. Others of us joined in 2016 is when I joined, and that's when a women's team started.
Okay.
So there was a mixed team and a women's team. And then over time, the women's team became a nonprofit organization in 2020. And at that time is when we became Dragon Flyers of Michigan, and we're open to anyone now. We still have more women in the boat, but we have men starting to join us. And our age range spans probably about 30 to 80.
Wow.
Anyone 14 and up is welcome. And in fact, we're actually hoping to start a youth team this year.
So you're just growing and growing if possible.
Yeah, it's the fastest growing team water sport, at least in North America. It's very popular in Canada. You see huge numbers of people involved in Toronto, Vancouver, Vancouver Island. Popular in Vermont, interestingly. There's a big group there.
Okay.
California, the Midwest, it's actually starting to grow quite a bit. So that's one of our hopes, is to really make people aware of this amazing sport.
And of the Dragon Flyers, what position are you, do you hold?
So we move around in the boat, typically.
Okay.
Depending on who's there at each practice, the coaches will do a lineup. And ideally, if you can sit in different benches on left or right, if you can move around, it's great, because they try to balance the boat so you're not left heavy or right heavy. And people that sit in the very front are called the strokes.
Right.
So they tend to be more experienced paddlers, and they would be people who would set the pace that the rest of us follow. And then the middle of the boat is referred to as the engine room, so your middle benches are kind of your power people. And the back of the boat they refer to as the rockets. So it's actually harder to paddle in the back because all the water is being moved back.
Right.
So you're dealing with heavier water when you're sitting at the back.
Right.
But ideally, the more you can move around the boat, the better it is, and the more the coaches can work with different lineups.
And that makes total sense.
Yeah.
You know, so you say 20 people in the boat.
Correct.
And is there sort of a master steer person or something?
Yes.
In the boat?
There is. So there's a steers person who's in the back of the boat with a big, long oar.
Right.
And that is for the purpose of when we do have to make big turns, and they'll be doing some steering and races to help us stay on course if needed. And often that person's also coaching, but sometimes it's not always the coach.
Okay. So you've been enjoying this for these years? I guess 8 years now?
Yeah, minus a year off during the pandemic when we couldn't paddle.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not a person that has been an athlete all my life. And this was finally the sport that told me I actually can be an athlete.
Right.
It's something you can learn for a lifetime, but you can do right from the beginning. So it's great for people that you can be already an experienced athlete, but you don't have to be. So it's a very welcoming sport, is what I would say.
And you're trying. Now, do you find there's a building interest in dragon boating?
Absolutely.
And
yes.
Are the like you say, you're trying to do the youth one this year. Is
right.
there a lot of interest in the younger people to start doing this?
Well, I think that's growing. So the Lansing race last year, the one sponsored by the Women's Center of Greater Lansing, there were two youth teams in it. That's the first time I had seen that. One was from a high school.
Okay.
Maybe it was just one youth team. But anyway, there was a youth team, and they did really well. And they were brand new to the sport. They just showed up and learned it on the spot, like most of the other teams that were there. And so, but we practice on a lake that has, the property is owned by a youth center here in Lansing called Building 21, and they lease space to us on the lake.
Right.
And we have our dock there, and so they've been interested in having some of their youth participate in the team, and we've been reaching out to some of the schools as well. So trying to build the...
Yeah, it's a good way to get kids involved. Outside. And,
exactly.
You know, maybe that leads to something else, too.
That's right.
And I mean, with dragon boating as well, like you say, 20 people that have to work together.
Yeah, it is very team-oriented.
Yeah, you start getting the youth into that, and they start learning how to work with other people.
Exactly.
And, you know, so there's life lessons in it as well.
There really are.
Yeah. Now, what about, do you have special teams? Now, I know there's a couple of them, women's teams, like only women's team for breast cancer and stuff like that.
Right, yeah.
Do you guys have events and stuff like that for that sort of thing down this way?
Well, every race event usually has something to honor people who are cancer survivors or dealing with cancer, particularly breast cancer. Some race events will have a division just for cancer survivors. So the race we go to in Ohio always has a
breast cancer groups. And okay. So depending on the event, there may be a division for that. But right. There's always some kind of a ceremony or something to remember those who've dealt with cancer. So it's part of the sport, and that goes back to a physician whose name I can't remember, but did research on paddling sports and people who had been through particularly breast cancer, and the thought was that paddling wouldn't be good for people who had dealt with that if they had lymph nodes removed or whatever, but it was the opposite.
Right.
The sport turned out to be good both physically, mentally, and emotionally, and it really supported the well-being of people recovering from breast cancer. So there's this close association with the sport.
Because that's funny that you say that, because that's how it sort of first came to our attention.
Yeah.
Dragon boating in, you know, like North America, and that was that so many things were associated with dragon boating and breast cancer.
That's
and now
right.
you see, even the Yukon race up, there's always one long boat with just women cancer survivors. And that seems to be the thing. And then, yeah, when we start looking at dragon boat racing, there's that theme there as well. And it just,
yeah.
It really seemed odd that that was the thing that was bringing people together.
Right.
Right? So.
We have two breast cancer survivors in our boat currently. One of them went to an international event in Italy that brought breast cancer survivors from all over the world, and they formed teams and raced there, so she was able to participate
That's
in that
cool.
type of event. Yeah.
That's cool.
It is.
So, the people you have, you say, is range up to the 80s and,
yes.
and stuff like that.
That's right.
And you're just trying to get more and more. Now, what happens if you get too many people and you need a second boat?
Well, that's a good problem to have as far as we're concerned. We hope to have a second boat. The more people that come, we could run. It might be we only have one boat, but we run two back-to-back practices or something like that. And maybe someday we buy another boat.
Right. Do you know how much boats cost?
They're not cheap, I'll say that.
Well,
boats
generally aren't, but...
The boat we have was purchased from one of the race events, so
okay.
I think after a certain number of years, they sell off those boats, so that's how we got the first one. But I'm sure they're in the $20,000+
yeah.
for a new boat. So this one was purchased as a used boat, but it's... And it does require a good amount of maintenance, so we do all our own maintenance and everything
okay.
ourselves. We built the dock ourselves. We learned a whole lot of things...
Well,
as
you're
well.
Starting from scratch.
Yeah.
I mean, somebody's got to learn it and do it, right?
Yep.
You guys, great camaraderie between everybody in and out of the boat, I presume?
Yes, yeah. I mean, every now and then, you know, you get a little annoyed about something, but that's true whenever you have a group of people. But for the most part, it's a very close group. I love our community. And what I like about it is it brings people of different ages from different sectors of the community. It's people that I wouldn't necessarily interact with outside of this.
Right.
And we do things off season as well. We go bowling. We went to see Boys in the Boat, the movie.
Right.
We actually also this year have something called a dragon boat, Erg, and that is like a rowing machine.
Okay.
But it simulates the paddling stroke of dragon boating. And so one of our coaches works with individual paddlers who want to come and sign up for a time. And so it's our first year to have that available. And that's been really good because the dragon boat stroke is unlike any other paddling stroke. And it's good to keep it fresh in your mind throughout the year and not get back in the boat in the spring and go, oh, now what was this again?
Well, you know, we have that, like I say, we do a lot of canoe tripping.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like I say, February, yeah, I'm just hibernating, you know. But... then all of a sudden, well, we're going to do our first trip in May. And then a couple of the guys are like, oh, man, I haven't done anything since we put the canoe away last year,
that's
right?
Right.
And it's got to be the same thing. Are there certain training techniques out of the boat that you can do over the winter?
Sure. Your general strength training is one of the best things you can do, as well as aerobic training. Because it is a sprinting sport, so you want both aerobic capacity, but you want a strong core.
Right.
That's, you know, I was never a gym person. And for the first time in my life, I now train regularly in the gym since I started dragon boating. Because the motivation was to be in good shape to get back in the boat. And so it takes a strong core. It's not just arms. A lot of people think it's just arms.
Yeah.
But actually, you get really tired if you're just using your arms. So strong core is really important. And we all try to do different kinds of training. But with some gym training, strength training, and now this Dragon Boat Erg that we have, those two things work together really well for off-season.
Because you can't really, I mean, unless you're sitting in the chair, I guess, with your paddle.
Yeah.
That, there's no real way to train that stroke, is there?
People do pool training. There are places where they have access to pools, and they sit on the edge of a pool, and you use a slightly different paddle that's just for that, called a pool paddle. We don't currently have that option, but who knows? Maybe someday we'll have
someday
access
have
to
that. Yeah.
A pool.
So you're thoroughly enjoying. What else can you tell us about your group?
You know, again, it's just an amazing group of people. I've never seen such a motivated, connected group of people that really enjoys the sport, but doing things together. And the outdoors, you know, being in nature, the lake we paddle on, we regularly see things like osprey, great blue herons. In fact, we had a name in the boat contest last year, and the winning name was Blue Heron.
Okay.
So our boat's called the Blue Heron. So, and you know, we regularly see muskrats and turtles and all these things. So it's kind of a the whole package that I think is so appealing, and it's the people that really makes it as good as it is.
Yeah, like I say, if you get something and you all have the same common interest and are totally enjoying it, then it's perfect, right?
Yeah,
and, I mean,
absolutely.
Getting outside in nature, I mean, you can't beat that.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
Seeing the animals, that sort of thing. Now, like you say, you move around in the boat sort of stuff. Is there preferred positions when you're in the boat?
I think it depends on the person.
Like the drummer guy?
Well, the drummer, though, that you're balancing on this little stool. So, and if the boat starts moving fast, occasionally the drummer feels like, whoa, they might go over.
Because you don't see what's coming, yeah.
Yeah, so it depends, I think, on the person. Some people like different positions. I like to move around, but I kind of like what I called the engine room, the middle of the boat.
Right.
It's got a little longer leg room, so if you're a taller person, it might be a bit more comfortable there. The benches, as you go forward and backward, it's a bit shorter distance between the benches,
okay.
So it's a little bit tighter. And the benches become narrower as well.
So I probably prefer to stay at the back somewhere.
But, you know, the views are slightly different, too, depending on where you sit.
Well, okay, so if you're in a race and that starter pistol goes off, you're not, I presume you're not looking forward.
Like, you are.
Are you really?
Yes, eyes to the finish is what they'll say in dragon boating. Eyes to the finish line. You're not supposed to stare down at your paddle, which people tend to do.
See, I figured you'd be staring sort of center back of the person
no,
in front
just
of
like
you.
I'm looking at you right now, straight ahead.
Really?
And the way dragon boat works, the paddle stroke, is you've got to lean out of the boat a bit. So I'm leaning like this if I'm on the left side. If you sit straight up, it slows the boat down. So if you're behind a dragon boat and people are in the correct position, you can look right through the middle of the boat and see out the front, basically.
Interesting.
Yeah. So you're leaning out, not way out, but out of the boat, and that keeps the boat from slowing down.
Okay. Now, the boat itself, I know you're saying all the maintenance that you do.
Yeah.
Is there anything special on the hull to help it get through? Like, you guys polish it, wax it?
We gel coat the boat, so we've done that before. And sometimes it needs a little patching, and it has to be clean. So when we pull it out, we actually take it through a drive-through car wash. Just pull that 40-foot boat right in and scrub away. And
right.
It takes, you know, a lot of hands. So you do have to clean it thoroughly every year. We clean it in the fall when we pull it out. We clean it again in the spring before we put it back in.
Okay.
And it requires some repairs and maintenance and things like that.
All boats tend to.
Yeah.
But you're still having a lot of fun doing it.
Absolutely. I'd recommend it to anybody.
So, Dragon Flyers of Michigan.
Yes.
And you are located
on Cedar Lake, which is North Mason, just off Cedar Street. It does have public access at Esker's Landing, it's called. People may know of that. And we have a dock outside of the youth center that I mentioned earlier.
Okay.
And so it's a long, skinny lake. It used to be a stone quarry originally.
Right.
It's just like a mile and a half long and not very wide. But it's a gorgeous
spot. Run?
It is.
Yeah. Now, if you guys start in May.
Yes.
If people want to find out more about you and contact you because they're interested.
Sure.
How?
They can email us at Dragon Flyers, so that's D-R-A-G-O-N, flyers@gmail.com. And they can look up Dragonflyers. I think it's Dragonflyers of MI that's the website. I'm sorry, okay. I don't have that in front of me. But we do have a website as well.
Okay.
And so if they write to that email, I'm actually the person that would be answering it.
Alrighty.
So, we're a nonprofit organization, so we do have a board.
Okay.
And I'm currently one of the people serving on the board. It's all everything's done by volunteers. And what I want to also say is we also invite non-paddling members.
Really?
We have an option to be a member and just be a supporter, help out at events, come cheer us on, be involved in fundraisers. So there is that option. I talked to somebody today who's not really a water person but was really interested, and I said, well, we have non-paddling members.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Nice. So how many events do you say you go to a year?
We're going to do three races this year.
Three
two
races
here in Michigan and one in Ohio.
Is it spread throughout the season?
Yeah,
or?
The first race is in late July, then there's one in late August, and then the Women's Center event here in Lansing in mid-September. So those are the three.
Okay.
We kind of look at the options and sort of weigh what are the travel costs going to be and all of that.
Yeah, like I say, it's not cheap to get 20 people.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. So, but we try to do maybe not always exactly the same events every year, so try different things out. We've done a couple of events in Chicago as well, and the one that we did there was a bit longer distance, so the races are anywhere from like 250 meters to 500 meters are the ones we've done.
So you got to push yourself every year and try something new, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, and that's it is if you keep doing the same things over and over and over and over, you might get a bit bored of it and start losing some people. So if it's always fresh and a challenge.
And the good thing is the sport itself is like a lifelong learning thing. There's always things about the stroke, about how you sit in the boat. You're always learning and refining.
Right.
So it's very engaging in that way as well.
Perfect.
So, yeah, it's a great sport.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much, Julie.
You're very welcome.
Dragon Flyers of Michigan.
Yes.
Google that, check it out, and if you're interested,
let us know. We will be starting in early May. We invite newcomers to come attend a practice or two and check it out. And we have options for people to join in sort of shorter segments for the whole summer. And we also will have weekend paddle dates once a month, every month, for people that just want to try it out more casually. So there are different ways to give it a try.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much, Julie.
Thanks so much for having me.
Enjoy the rest of the show.
I will. You too.
Dragon Flyers of Michigan. I learned stuff about, I mean, we watched the videos.
Yes.
You know, you see, oh, look at them go, and that sort of stuff, and the strokes and all that sort
I've
of stuff.
I've done it before. Very short time. I tried it out. So there's a couple friends that I knew that were doing dragon boating. They said, hey, come on out, try it out. So it was in Cobourg.
Right.
And I went out with them, like, I think twice or three times. And it didn't stick. It was like, I found it very tough. You have to be in really good shape because it's a very high paced paddling.
Yeah.
And you have to be really in tune with everybody you're paddling with because the entire left side will stroke and then the entire right side will stroke. So you have to be in unison. And if you're just slightly out, then you're going to whack somebody's paddle and throw off everybody's, you know, the rhythm and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I don't know. I was just found it very hard. It was very difficult.
I'll stick to my two-man dragon boat.
We did just a couple with a few times that I did it. It was just really quick sprints.
Yeah.
And I thought, man, if we had to do more than a few minutes at a time with the practice and the trials, then I think I might throw up.
I just dive out.
Yes.
Well, the one thing that I was talking to her about there that, I mean, to me, I would be looking down at the middle of the person's maybe lower back or something just to concentrate on do, so nothing else is distracting. But she says, no, you look straight ahead.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, that just to me would be odd.
It helps you maintain.
Because I'm not steering.
No.
I don't need to see where we're going. I need to concentrate on, you know, because I'm looking forward. I'm thinking, Yeah, whoever's steering back there, you might want to go to the left. And next thing you know, I'm doing a little bit of a draw. Yeah.
You're throwing us off.
I'm in the middle of doing a draw, trying to turn us left. That's not going to go well.
This isn't going to work.
Throw him out. But no, that was a really good interview. I really enjoyed talking to Julie and learning a few things that I just didn't know before.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it was all about.
It's a fascinating sport,
Sport, but like I say, I'll stick to my my two-man dragon boat in the backcountry.
Exactly. Me too.
That's all we're going to do this week is those two interviews. Yeah, it was fun. So we'll get more. We got more to go.
Yes.
More to go. You got anything to add before we leave?
I have nothing to add.
Nothing to add.
Nope.
Alrighty. Well, if you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can download or stream our episodes at iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Just Google Paddle Adventures Radio and we're there. You can go to their episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com and listen to all our episodes there. Download or stream them. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.